Mahabharata, Chapter 22, Into the Forest. When the Pandavas were gone, Dhritarashtra became prey to anxiety. Thinking of the dangers awaiting his sons, he could not enjoy peace of mind. He brooded in his rooms for some time and then called for Vidura. When his brother arrived, the king timidly asked, "I desire to hear how Yudhisthira and his brothers left the city. How did Draupadi proceed? What was the exalted Domya doing as they left the city?" Vidura replied, "Yudhisthira walked with his face covered by a cloth. Bhima was looking at his mighty arms, and Arjuna was scattering sands as he walked. Sahadev smeared his face with dirt, and Nakula covered his body with ashes. The lotus-eyed Draupadi followed them with her face bathed in tears and her hair disheveled. Domya walked before them, carrying kushagrass and uttering fearful mantras from the Samaveda relating to Yamaraj." Intrigued by this description, Dhritarashtra inquired further, "Tell me why they have assumed these various guises, O Vidura. Although your sons persecuted him and deprived him of his kingdom by foul means, the wise Dharmaraj has not deviated from the path of virtue. Thus he covered his face, thinking, 'I may consume innocent citizens by looking at them with eyes made fearful by anger.' Bhima strode forth from the city, repeatedly stretching his arms and thinking how none could equal him in strength. He desires to do to his enemies acts worthy of those arms. Arjuna, who is capable of drawing his bow with both hands, scattered sands to symbolize the countless arrows he will let loose in battle. Sahadev smeared his face, thinking, 'None should recognize me in this hour of calamity.' And the incomparably handsome Nakula covered himself with ashes, thinking, 'I should not steal the hearts of women as I walk exposed along the public highway.' Hearing of Bhima and Arjuna's belligerence, the blind king became even more fearful. What would become of Duryodhana and his brothers now?" Dhritarashtra listened with growing concern as Vidura continued his description. The chaste Draupadi, attired in a single piece of cloth, her hair bedraggled due to Dushasan's touch, went along saying, "The wives of those who have reduced me to this plight will, in 14 years from now, have to lament as I am lamenting. Bereft of their husbands and sons, they will enter the city by this road, having offered oblations of water to their dead relatives at the river. O Dhritarashtra, the learned and self-controlled Domya, holding blades of Kusha pointed south, uttered the Samaveda, thinking, 'When all the Kauravas are killed, their priest will sing these same mantras.' Vidura told the king how Hastinapur's citizens were condemning the Kuru chiefs and wailing with sorrow. Lightning flashed from a cloudless sky, and the earth trembled. The sun was eclipsed, and meteors fell. Jackals yelped from all directions, and vultures and ravens shrieked from the temples of the gods. All these signs portend destruction of your race, O king. This is only the result of your own evil desires." Vidura looked at Dhritarashtra, who sat wringing his hands and saying nothing. Just at that moment, the great Rishi Narada suddenly appeared, surrounded by other powerful sages. He stood before Duryodhana and said gravely, "On the 14th year from now, for Duryodhana's fault, Bhima and Arjuna will destroy the Kauravas." After saying this, Narada rose upwards into the sky with the other rishis and disappeared. All the Kurus were gripped by fear. Narada's words could not prove false. Seeing that war was inevitable, Duryodhana, Karna, and Shakuni approached Drona to offer him command of the army. Drona said, "The Brahmins have said that the Pandavas are of divine origin and cannot be killed. Out of fear of those heroes, however, you have sought my shelter, and I cannot refuse. Destiny is supreme. I shall do everything within my power to protect you, even though the Pandavas are allied with Jupiter, whose son was born to kill me. Thus I too must be about to die. O Kurus, enjoy while you can. Offer sacrifice and give charity freely. At the end of 14 years, calamity will overtake us all." Jonah spoke so Dhritarashtra could hear. The old king found himself more and more anxious as he thought of the injustice for which he had been responsible. Now his son had everything he wanted, but how long could it last? Enmity with the Pandavas would be a dangerous road even for the gods. Dhritarashtra's thoughts went back to the day Duryodhan was born. Why had he not listened to Vidura's advice? Even then his affection for his son had overpowered all his judgment and reason. Now he was about to face the consequences for his sentimental weakness. The king called for his secretary Sanjaya, who, although a charioteer and sudra by birth, was Vyasadeva's disciple and his own friend. Sanjaya had been often able to console Dhritarashtra with his wisdom. When he arrived, he saw the king sitting with his head bowed, sighing repeatedly. With a wry smile, the charioteer said, "O king, you have now obtained this whole earth and all its wealth. Why then do you grieve?" Dhritarashtra shook his head. "What to they who will have to meet in battle those foremost of fighters, the Pandavas, not have to grieve for?" Sanjaya spoke frankly. "This, O king, is your own fault. You have created a hostility which will destroy the world. Although Bhishma, Drona, and Vidura condemned Duryodhan's behavior, your wicked son had the beloved and virtuous Draupadi dragged into the assembly hall and cruelly insulted. Why did you not check him? Surely the gods deprive that man of his reason to whom they have ordained defeat and disgrace. He sees everything in a strange light. When destruction is at hand, his mind is polluted by sin, and evil then appears as good. That which is improper appears proper, while that which is proper appears otherwise." Sitting alone with his secretary, Dhritarashtra listened sorrowfully to his words, which he knew were moral and true. The king held his head as Sanjaya continued. "By dragging the chaste and ascetic Panchali into the hall, the Kauravas, wretches that they are, have brought upon themselves wholesale destruction. Who else but Duryodhan and his wicked allies could have so abused Jupiter's divinely born daughter, dragging her into the hall when she was in her season and covered with blood? There she saw her husbands robbed of their wealth, kingdom, and even their dress, and forced into slavery. Bound by ties of virtue, they were unable to exert their prowess. But, O king, the time will soon come when we shall see their power displayed." Dhritarashtra's voice faltered as he spoke. "O Sanjaya, Draupadi's pained glances can consume the whole world. What chance is there for even one of my sons to survive?" All the Kuru women, headed by Gandhari, sent up a frightful wail when Dushashan seized Draupadi. Even now they weep along with my subjects. Enraged at Draupadi's persecution, the Brahmins refuse to perform their fire sacrifices. We see fearful omens all around the kingdom. It seems our destruction is near at hand. Surely this is the influence of all-powerful destiny." After speaking in this way for some time, the king dismissed Sanjaya and sat alone in his chamber throughout the night, the gambling match replaying in his mind again and again. The Pandavas left Hastinapur by the northern gate, accompanied by a number of servants. As they were leaving the city, the crowds looked upon and openly criticized the Kuru elders. "When the wicked Duryodhan aspires to this kingdom, we are all lost. Our wealth, families, homes, and even ourselves are gone. Ruled by that sinful, malicious, avaricious man, who is aided only by other sinful men, we are doomed. How can we find happiness? Let us follow these virtuous heroes to the forest." A few citizens approached Yudhisthira. Where will you go, leaving us behind? We are distressed to learn of your defeat by deceitful means. Take us with you. We do not wish to meet with destruction by living in the kingdom of a sinful king. By such association we will be polluted by sin, whereas by associating with you, we will be uplifted to the highest level of virtue. Eudister folded his palms and replied, We are indeed blessed, as the people with their Brahmins at their head credit us with merits we do not possess. I, with all my brothers, would ask you to do one thing for the sake of the love you bear us. The king, along with our grandfather Bhishma, the wise Vidura, our mother Kunti, and our friends, are in Hastinapur. Please stay here and cherish them. Only this will satisfy me. The citizens cried out in pain. Sorrowfully, they unwillingly retraced their steps back into the city, thinking only of the Pandavas. When the citizens were gone, the Pandavas ascended their chariots and moved toward the north. At dusk they arrived at the bank of the Ganges and found the great banyan tree known as Pramana. They decided to spend the night there and thus dismounted their chariots and bathed in the Ganges. As darkness fell, the many Brahmins who had followed the brothers lit their sacred fires, which cast an orange glow into the blackness of the night. The holy rishis, sitting around the fire, chanting Vedic mantras in melodic tones, soothed the Pandavas. Surrounded by such self-realized souls, Yudhisthira and his brothers again shone resplendent like celestials in heaven. In the morning, the brothers prepared to enter the forest. They sat before the sacred fire and offered prayers to the gods to invoke auspiciousness. They then asked the Brahmins to bless them and allow them to leave. Yudhisthira spoke sorrowfully. We were robbed of our kingdom, wealth, and everything we possessed. O best of men, we will not be able to maintain you, as is our duty. In the forest we will have to subsist on fruits and wild roots. The forest is also filled with dangerous beasts and serpents. Please, therefore, return to Hastinapur. The suffering of Brahmins can overwhelm even the gods. What to speak of ourselves? I do not wish to be the cause of your privations, O holy ones. The Brahmin's leader, Shaunaka, replied, O king, we will go with you. Do not be anxious about how we will survive. We shall procure our own food and take great delight in an ascetic life. By our prayers and meditations we shall do you good, and we shall keep you entertained with our recitations from the holy scriptures. I do not doubt it may be as you say, replied Yudhisthira. I am always pleased to be in the company of Brahmins, but now I am destitute. My brothers are anguished on my account, and I see myself as reproachable. How shall I see you, who do not deserve to suffer, subsist on food you have procured yourself? Alas, fie upon Dhritarashtra's wicked sons. Yudhisthira sat and wept with his head in his hands. In Indraprastha he had maintained tens of thousands of Brahmins, and now he could not provide food for even a few. Seeing the king feeling so dejected, Shaunaka consoled him by speaking from the Vedas. 1,000 causes of grief and 100 causes of fear overwhelm the ignorant day by day, but they never overwhelm those who are learned. O king, intelligent men like you are never cast into illusion. You cannot be bewildered by reverses, knowing full well the eternal truths of the Vedas. Bring that wisdom to mind now, O Yudhisthira. Shaunaka explained how the root of suffering is attachment to matter. As a fire in the hollow of a tree consumes the whole tree to its roots, so a small attachment, if nurtured, can destroy a man. One who has renounced attachment, even though living in the world, becomes free from evil passions and the suffering that they produce. Yudhisthira listened attentively, taking delight in the knowledge he had heard spoken so many times. He never tired of hearing it. Shaunaka told him that the desire for wealth and opulence, which could never be alleviated, is man's worst enemy. The highest happiness comes from contentment, while the struggle for wealth, fame, followers, and the association of loved ones is the cause of bondage and ultimately pain. Therefore, O King, you should not covet anything. Do not desire to accumulate wealth even for virtuous purposes. It is better to never have touched mud than to wash it off after being covered in it. If you wish to acquire virtue, then free yourself from all desires for wealth. Yudhisthira was puzzled. O Rishi, I do not desire anything for myself. I only wish to have enough wealth to support the Brahmins. What use is there in leading a householder's life if he cannot cherish and support his dependents? Is it not the duty of a householder to maintain both his family members and the brahmacharis and renunciates? So too should a householder welcome guests and travelers. This is said to be the path to religious merit. What is your opinion, O learned Brahman? Alas, this world is full of contradictions, Shanaka replied. That which makes the good and honest ashamed pleases the wicked. Moved by ignorance and passion, men act simply to gratify their stomachs and sex organs. When the senses come in contact with their objects, a desire springs up in the heart to enjoy those objects. Blinded by desire, men become absorbed in following the dictates of the senses, which they mistake for real happiness. Shanaka explained that even pious men may be overpowered by desire when associating with the world and its enjoyable objects. Yudhisthira had already achieved success in his householder life. Now, without attachment or material desire, he should concentrate on his practice of yoga and austerity in order to attain full spiritual success. By his spiritual power, he would then be able to support the Brahmins. Yudhisthira thanked the Rishi for his instructions, which he said he would follow. Then, still desiring to find the means by which he could maintain those ascetics who wished to accompany him to the forest, the king asked Domya's advice. O great sage, I cannot abandon the Brahmins, but at the same time have no power to provide for them. What should I do? Domya reflected on Yudhisthira's question for some minutes, and then he replied, Long ago, all created beings were afflicted by hunger. Thereupon Surya took compassion upon them. Drawing up water with his rays, he stayed over the earth. Then the moon, by its cooling powers, converted the resultant vapors into clouds. The rain fell, and by the combination of sun and rain, food was brought forth from the earth. Thus all beings are actually supported by the sun. Take shelter of the sun god, O king, and you will be able to fulfill your purposes. Domya explained to Yudhisthira how the great kings of the past had all protected and delivered their subjects by virtue of their own ascetic meditation and vows. The Pandava immediately understood. In order to secure the means to support the Brahmins, he should worship the sun god with an ascetic vow. Thus he asked the sage what means he should follow. Domya instructed Yudhisthira in the 108 names of the sun, as well as the Vedic prayers he should recite. Then Yudhisthira entered the Ganges, stood facing the sun, and offered numerous prayers and worship to its deity. He took neither food nor water for several days and controlled his breathing through the process of pranayama yoga. Renouncing sleep, the king continuously praised the sun god from the waters of the Ganges. 3 days later, the blazing sun god appeared before Yudhisthira and said, I am pleased with your prayers and austerities, O king. You shall get all that you desire. I shall provide you with food for the 12 years of your exile in the forest. The god gave to Yudhisthira a large copper plate with the following instruction. When Panchali has cooked a meal, she should place the food on this dish. That food will then be inexhaustible in quantity until the time when she herself eats. You can thus feed any number of men from this plate, O king. The god then rose into the sky and vanished, adding, you will regain your kingdom in 14 years from now." Yudhisthira then came out of the river with the plate and took hold of Domya's feet in worship. With great happiness he embraced his brothers and then handed the mystical plate to Draupadi. She immediately cooked a meal and placed it on the dish. After offering the food to the Lord with appropriate prayers, she served the Brahmins. To her amazement and delight, she saw that as she served from the plate, the food was immediately replenished. It was only when she took her own meal after serving her husband's that she saw the dish finally empty. When they had eaten, the Pandavas, blessed by auspicious rites and Vedic prayers, set out for the forest of Kamyaka, accompanied by hundreds of Brahmins.